as I, because I was like 15 or something at the time when that was happening. So as I got a little bit older and more mature and stopped being such a little brat, then we became friends.
I used to do, we'd do radio interviews when I worked in Alaska. So they would call all the time. And so I'd have to give the weather spiel to the radio.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then, you know, they'd play it back or something. Then you'd hear it on the national radio deal. So and I'd be like, whoa, that's really weird. That's what it sounds like. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that's something people think about a lot, too. It's like, oh, I can't stand the sound of my own voice. And I think it's interesting how I wonder how you are with this, Jason.
Yeah, do you sound even, like the way you talk?
Because
like,
I hate hearing my voice.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't sound.
It's really hard to even listen to this podcast.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I figure I would have wondered if just doing music for so long that you would have just gotten used to it. Because that's for me, doing podcasts for 10 years or whatever. I don't think about my voice at all. It's just editing, you know?
But the difference is mostly I'm shooting out live and never looking back.
Oh,
you're always looking back.
Yeah,
because you're editing.
Yeah.
So you're hearing.
You're
that
used
back.
To it, and you're editing your own work.
That's really.
Where
good
I'm
point.
Like, you make it good. I don't want to do that. I'll do it with someone else, and they could. I really hate.
I suppose somebody else is doing all the Woodblind albums.
Well, actually, me and Teague are kind of and Vaco. We're kind of doing like the edits of all the recordings, but then Dave Mayling's mixing.
Oh, so
and that's being mastered.
Yes, so you don't have to sit listen to it for too long.
Well, quite a bit, but I'm not singing or talking. Teague is on those.
Right. Okay. Well, that's that helps.
And if I'm singing, it's different than talking. So it's only the talking I can't stand.
And then the singing is
the singing is
like,
different.
It's fine. You're
singing
like,
or whistling, no problem. Because it's like what I do. It sounds the way I want it to sound. But when I talk, I'm like, why is that my voice?
Yeah.
I was just like,
what happened?
Why do you talk like that? Mm-hmm. What is wrong with you?
It's kind of like European singers. How they sound American.
Oh, yeah.
But then they start talking and it's just like, wait, you can't even speak English.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't mean to keep talking about my own stuff, but we did an episode of another show where we talked about Cotton Eye Joe.
Oh, right.
And that song is, they're Swedish punk singers or something, or folk, or something. They're
really?
Pop singers, yeah. And
the original Cotton Eye Joe.
Well, no. original one is a slave ballad.
Right. Oh, it is.
Yeah,
Cotton Eye.
That was an interesting little discovery.
Yeah,
I mean, like, oh, I thought this was just a funky song from the 90s.
Oh.
Nope. It goes way back.
Oh,
and then somehow these Swedes discovered it, and they're like, this slaps, and they, then that's one of those ones too, where it's like before you know that they're all Swedish, you're like. You might think they're just rednecks, which is the band name, by the way.
Rednecks, right.
The rednecks.
But then you look at them, knowing they're all Scandinavians, and you go, oh, yeah, no, duh. Because they're like all like long blonde hair and pale skin, and you're like, oh, yeah. And you've been up in the north for a long time.
Your lack of suntan.
Yeah. It's deep in your DNA. But anyway, that's the show called Super Serious. This is the Wusos podcast, where we talk about the cafe and all the people who influence it. I'm one of your hosts, Terry. Along with
Mr. Whistler.
Wow.
Just kidding. That's my old nickname, Whistler.
I could see the Whistler part.
It makes sense.
But Mr. Whistler sounds better.
Mr. Whistler.
No, I'm Jason.
You could embrace Mr. Whistler from now on, though.
It used to be Whistlin' Pip. Because I wear those little, like, you know, ska hats and then Pip from South Park. So then I was always whistling, and then I was Whistlin' Pip.
It's fantastic. It sounds like an insult a little bit.
It was.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Okay. Yeah.
But you just go with it.
No, it wasn't. It was.
No, it's fun.
And our guest, you're Ron. I don't.
Williams.
Ron Williams. Sorry, I don't even know your last name. I didn't. Now I should.
I didn't either. But then I did.
I didn't. I knew we were going to be talking to you eventually. I didn't actually know it was going to be today.
Okay.
Great. Oops. But I know Jason's told me a bit about what's going on. I am interested to hear, because it sounds like you've had quite kind of all over the place kind of life of bipping and bopping all over the world. And
it's just been quite an adventure journey, really.
Yeah. It's been good. I like to try to just go back into the most interesting earliest point. I know one thing I know now is you're doing meteorology. Right.
Yeah.
Has that been like your career?
It has been.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
since like 2000. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, 25 years, I guess it's been I've been with the Weather Service doing doing this gig. So,
and how did all begin? Like, were you always into the idea of
not really. Just kind of a long progression of. I grew up in the UP of Michigan, a little place called Ishpeming, a little town of about 2,000 people. And you get a lot of snow in the UP. So, you know, the
I'm
UP.
Clapping for the area, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, Upers up there. I don't know if you spend any time over there, but they average around 250, 300 inches of snow a year. Yeah. So skiing and outdoor stuff, a small town, we were athletes. We were just out, we were skiing, running, we were doing everything outside, hunting, fishing. Everything was based on the weather. So sure. I was just glued as a kid. I remember in the early 80s, finally cable came out and we had the Weather Channel. And I was just glued to it because I'm like, wow, I can watch the weather. I can see what it's going
to
be like tomorrow.
I used to get Powder Magazine and watch the Weather Channel to follow the snow. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, watching Powder Magazine. And then watching Bob Beattie, I remember on TV, you'd watch like skiing.
Yeah.
And that just got me so hooked
or
on it.
Miller.
Downhill. Right. And then Ishpeming has is the National Ski Hall of Fame. So all my neighbors, we grew up ski jumping as well. So we've got all the Suicide Hills were there. Mm-hmm. So we're doing all the, I didn't jump any of the big hills, but I grew up with the small, just jumping the small hills. And
yeah,
my folks were like, yeah, before you break your neck, we'll just keep you off the suicide hill. So.
How about this weather stuff? So. You like weather, not ski hills?
Yeah, you know, it was just kind of that whole weather thing. But, and then
weather
moved,
brings the snow.
Yeah, but it moved into, I was 12 years old and I had a brother. It was an airline pilot. He's retired now. So I started flying and then I had a lot of friends. My dad was older when he had me, but I started just flying these little bush planes when I was a little kid. So I learned how to fly when I was like 12, 13 years old.
Me too. I told you.
Yeah, but it was cheap back then.
Who's letting all these kids fly around?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't fly by myself, but
you have a bush pilot dad.
Yeah, right. And
that's
kind of
when I met Ronnie, he knew all about otters and beavers and cubs on floats. I'm like, whoa, where'd you grow up?
Yeah, for
sure.
I'm
the UP of Michigan. Yeah. What do you do?
And then, of course, you know what? With flying, everything's meteor. It's weather based.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's meteorology. Mm-hmm. So every day you're going to go fly. It's like, oh, what's it going to be? Is it going to be windy? Is it going to be snowing? We're going to have the visibility. So I'm just this young kid and I'm looking at the Weather Channel. And then we had the National Weather Service in Marquette. We had flight service stations back then. So you could go in, you could talk to a briefer. Oh. And I just thought it was so cool. This guy had maps and he was just telling me about the weather, what's going to happen next week.
The briefer means the someone you can refer to. Like you'll come and ask
the briefer,
questions.
Yeah. Like, you could just walk right up to this.
Yeah.
Briefer guy.
Like
and he would give you a briefing.
When you're taking off, it's like, what's the weather like? And they'll be like, oh, it's going to be this. Yeah,
exactly.
When you had maps on your lap.
Oh, yeah. And that's a whole other story, you know, trips back then because aviation's completely changed now compared to
I can't imagine a briefer is still a position that's around.
No. There's I think there still is a flight service station.
I think he said
officially.
Reefer.
I noticed briefer. You thought that.
Yeah. I was like, reefer? The reefer?
Cool job.
Oh, like he refers you. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
But no, this is your brief right here. I'm pointing my phone.
Yeah, right.
Everything is on here. I can travel around the world with it. I've got on-demand weather, weight and balance. I can do everything on my phone now, which is, it's just amazing. So.
With the phones in mind too, it's just to imagine then going back to not even that far in time, right? And then having to go ask a guy something that you can just Google now. It's just, I don't know. That's funny.
Also, imagine going back in time, tell them about how you had to triangulate a path to go anywhere you wanted to go and look for water towers or like explain what it was like to fly from here to Texas. Like,
yeah. So one of my first cross country trips, I remember, and it's kind of funny thinking about it because I'm like 19 years old and I spent a stint in the Marine Corps and I was stationed out in California and I had this little plane that I worked all summer and you know, you could buy a plane for, would be the price of a cheap pickup truck.
Your first plane for?
It was $4,000. It was a Piper Colt.
That's crazy.
And it was, this was in 1987. Sure, but then in 1990, I was stationed out in California and I wanted to get the plane out there. And I'm thinking, well, it'd be really fun. I'll just fly the plane out there. No, it'll be really fun.
Right? Yeah.
So my mom brought me down to the airport. I think I had
check the oil.
Yeah, I had flip flops on and, you know, no cell phone. I had a stack of maps and I had a little bag with me, but I mean, I barely had anything.
Probably without a blanket or anything for survival when you crash.
And I pull the plane out and she says,
flip-flops.
Yeah. I feel like you're not even supposed to drive your car with flip-flops.
No, I totally had flip-flops on. I'm ready to go. I'm all set. And the last thing, mom, she looks at me and she says, now give me a call when you get to California.
probably smart.
You have a bunch of maps for every state on your lap looking for water towers.
Yeah, and this isn't a plane that's going fast. This thing's like, going 90 miles an hour. So
like you're basically just driving there.
Yeah.
But it's really high up.
And then you got to realize, like, you didn't have this. You didn't have the weather. You had the briefer guy, right? And you could get to a frequency. You could get up to 3,000 feet. And maybe on 122.0, you could get what's called flight watch. So I'd be calling flight watch. I'm not getting anyone. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. But I've just got these maps. They're called WAC charts. Or sectionals, but the WACs are bigger, but they don't have a lot of detail on it. So I'm just plotting this course, and you're following this magnetic compass. So you've got, obviously, you got a lot of correction on there as well. So you're following this thing, and you get lost a lot. Yeah, there was a few times I looked down, and in airports back then, they would have their name of the city on the building. Sure. So I just remember going over, was it Liberal, Kansas or something?
Oh, no, that town
and I'm
smells
thinking,
terrible.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
They have that big Kansas rendering plant there. It is so gross. I stayed there in a hotel because it was the cheapest. I found out why. That town, even the inside of the hotel room smells like the outside. Sorry, anyone who lives there. You're used to it. I get it. When you live somewhere long enough, it's like you don't smell your cats,
right.
But everyone else does. You get used to it.
So back to that story, Liberal, Kansas, and I'm seeing this, and I'm looking down, and I'm like, I thought I was in Nebraska. So I'm like, I'm not even in the right state. So you land, and you're just like, oh, my gosh, and you got to reconfigure. And
is that how you... Is that the best way to know your loss is just seeing a specific landmark?
Yeah, that's all you would do. Okay. Yeah, yeah, you would just, they call it dead reckoning. So when you're flying.
Water
you're
towers with names.
Water towers, right. Names. You're looking at airports with names. And
big
bridges,
lakes. In Canada, it's all about the shapes of lakes.
Right.
It's all pine trees, and then you're looking for whatever, long neck lake or hockey stick lake or whatever.
Bridge,
just like
or
anything
tower
that,
or something like that. And you're looking
that's
at
that's
how
you're keeping
like,
track then
that's
too.
That's how you're confirming where you're going. Or highways. So finally,
highway.
I get just tired of this, and I'm like, I'm just going to make it to Interstate 40.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to fly the 40 all the way across. But the problem with that is when you're going west, you've got westerly winds, and it's very windy.
Yeah.
So you're flying west, and I'm looking down, and I'm like, well, this plane only goes 90 mile an hour. Speed limit on 40 is like 90, basically, back then. So,
and
so here I am flying.
Two, three times as
and
much.
I'm looking at cars and trucks, and they're just passing me up going, and I'm like, I'm not saving anything.
You know what, though? if you're lucky, though, on the way back, you get the tailwind.
Yes,
because
right.
Then you can.
Yeah, then you're doing 150 mile an hour. You're cruising.
Yeah,
you can't beat the view, I suppose.
It can be like a long way one way and a real fast way back, unless it turns.
Yeah,
that's where the weatherman comes involved. It's like, when is it going to turn? How am I going to get the best gas mileage?
Everything is going good, so you've got it all set up. Yeah. You're filing the highway, and then you get to the mountains, and then you're running into weather. So I remember getting up to, I was trying to get over Winslow, and then there's like low clouds, and I'm up at 6,000 feet.
Winslow, Arizona.
On
I-40. On
I-40. Yep. So I got to Winslow, and I'm thinking, oh, I can make it. And then all of a sudden, the clouds in the ground come together.
I don't think of it as that mountainous, but it is kind of up high elevation.
Yeah. It's getting up there, maybe not 6,000, but probably 4,000.
It's
kind of
it's like
hills.
That western step just comes up, and you kind of forget how high you are because the peaks,
and
it seems low.
That was like my first experience with like mountain flying. So, and usually you go for training for that. Not me. I'm heading on out.
I'll figure it out.
I got flip-flops
It's like
on.
You bought a scooter. You know, it's like, you didn't even need a license. You know, like, well, you know, you did have a license.
Yeah, but. I had a license, but didn't have a lot of time. I mean,
but they gave them pretty easy back then, I think.
It wasn't too hard to get your license.
I don't think so. Even when I was doing it, it's like, really, this is all you got to do?
Yeah.
But then it was like, I don't think I want to pay attention to all these knobs.
Yeah.
You know, it's too many knobs, and I'm like, I can't see all those knobs.
And kind of the problem with it is that a private license is a license to learn. So I think a lot of pilots, they figure, hey, I got my license. I'm good. I can go do
a
whatever.
A license to learn?
It's a license to learn. So it's you're just
you.
Starting
role
out.
Model.
So, you know, you're like
a license to learn.
It's a license to learn. You just, you have to work on
A barista
all your skills,
is a license to
Yeah. It's a license to learn. You got that. Your license.
And then you can be able to quit on their first day. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what I'm talking to be like this.
So, yeah. So that trip just took a long time. It took me, I think it was about 5 days to get out there.
To get there?
Yeah. So I could have drove a lot faster. Well, I got stuck.
It's not like you're just driving. You just like pull over, get some munchies, you'll pee.
Yeah. And it's not comfortable. You're sitting in this like small little box. So it's like 3 hours is like max.
And you have to have everything going. You got 2 feet on the rudder, so you got left and right. You don't get to ever take your feet off. They're your everything, and then your yoke up and down, and then weather comes in, and now it's hailing, and it's lightning, and now you can't see.
Well, and that's what happened in Flagstaff. I ended up being there, and it was like, okay, now it's monsoonal flow in Flagstaff, and every afternoon it's boom, there's just big thunderstorms and hail, and in this plane,
is that going up and down?
You get all these thermals, you know, you go up 1,000 feet, you go down 1,000 feet.
You're literally just being like pushed up, pulled down.
Time. Yeah, like those thermals are just like,
that's nuts.
That's why you see those big sail planes that are out west. And I mean, they'll just start getting in the thermals. They'll go to like 20,000 feet. Wow. Yeah, they just glide on up and soaring. That's nuts. So the mountains get all that uplift. Sure. So
what's an ideal situation then at this? Because it sounds like you could pretty easily get into some rough waters. Well,
he likes rougher waters. He's into like tundra tires now and short takeoffs. And
yeah, it's just a whole different deal now. I don't fly across the country so much. Yeah. A lot of it's just a lot of local.
Oh, sure.
A lot of local flying. We're flying bush tires and stuff. It's just fun stuff. Yeah.
You went to Oshkosh?
Yeah, Oshkosh, and just camping out, like going to Madeline Island and going down to Cumberland and just regional stuff. I'll go to Marquette. And
I told him about my favorite place, and he's like, I'll see if they have a reservation. I'll fly there. I was like, what?
Yeah. What did you do in the Army or Marines? Did you say?
So I was infantry in the Marine Corps. Okay. So Gulf War broke out. I was going to school in Florida at the time, and I think I went and saw a recruiter on Monday, and Wednesday I was at basic training at Parris Island, South Carolina.
Yeah, and before you change your mind, let's go.
Yeah. Let's get you over there. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, what did I do?
Yeah. Which is why they get you so quick. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. And how long were you in then?
I was in 4 years.
4 years, okay.
Years, so. But it was a lot of fun because I traveled. Like everywhere. I was deployed everywhere. So that got me into the whole travel bug and seeing different places and stuff. So a lot of your
travels happened post-military then?
Kind of during the military too. I think I counted up. I moved like 28 times since high school or something. Wow. Some crazy number. But so like even when I was in basic training in South Carolina, I went up to Security Forces training up in Norfolk, Virginia. And then I was in the Philippines in Subic Bay, and I was there for over 2 years. And then came back, and then I was sent off to Africa for a while and came back. And then I was on a ship over in Japan. And I was up to Russia for a while. And
Really all over there.
Wow. So I was just, to Russia for a while.
They would just send me on these ships and stuff, and they would just deploy you wherever. So, and if you wanted to travel, you would just be like, hey, send me.
Yeah, there's always stuff going on.
A lot of people didn't want to go. They wanted to stay, you know, stay in CONUS, which is continental United States. And I was like, hey, send me.
Send
me to go. I want to.
Were I someone who would have joined, I would have been one to stay home. But I'm not even that far. So
You know, you're saying a lot of people.
I'm extra staying home.
Yeah. Extra staying home. Yeah. Yeah. So when you had told me about doing this episode, you had kind of went through a list of all these different adventures that you had that came to mind, and so I'm curious if you have any of yours, any of those that you had listed that you want to ask about in particular.
Well, with Ron's amazing adventure seeking skills, he obviously found mountain biking, which also he combined with extreme mountain biking competition and camping,
right.
But also you did that in other countries. And also you've fallen off cliffs and had amazingly unbelievable injuries. If anyone will have to post a photo, but Ron looks like he's never even been kissed by any problem. Never had a stitch.
Never been kissed by any problem.
You know, it's like he's like, he just glows like the brightest bulb. And you wouldn't know he's like spent months in a Mexican hospital being nursed back to health after falling off a cliff or like some of these kind of stories.
yeah, I guess I gotta say I'm very interested now in the cliff falling story.
No,
if you,
you know,
don't mind. I mean,
maybe it's just a pile of rocks. But
yeah,
either way.
Just a lot of wrecks and stuff. You know, when you do bike packing and mountain bike racing, you just have a tendency to fall. And
I suppose.
And when you fall into rocks and stuff, you know, you break ribs and break things. And
yeah,
it just kind of goes with it. So, but
Fell off more than just the Mexico one for sure. That was what, right?
Yeah. Was this the.
You broke a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how many things?
No. Well, you know, just. Yeah,
just on my bones.
An undisclosed amount,
just
but
a lot of broken stuff and sprained stuff and just messed up. But.
But that doesn't seem to have deterred you at all.
Well, you know, and the thing is, when you get injured and you have one of these bad setbacks is... And I just remember like having a broken femur and this was from a different, I had a fractured femur and my hands were broken and I'm thinking, how bad of a situation is this? And the only thing you can think about is this isn't going to get better.
Oh,
I suppose it can't get much worse, right? You're just sitting there. I can't walk. I can't move my hands.
That's why you shouldn't watch some of those shows because then it does get worse. Then you slip off and fall down another ravine and then you have to crawl out 3 days later after not eating and dehydration sets in. Yeah, and you're drinking your own pee, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. It could get worse.
Touring as a band is
and then you can finally get to the line where you see some help and they drive away.
That could
and then
be
you
bad.
Gotta go one more day.
That could be bad.
It could be worse.
I think I called a buddy one time though. I was bike packing across New Mexico and I ran out of food and I ended up in the mountains up what is it? Abiquiu. I don't know if you've been up
in New Mexico,
Abiquiu, and you're going
by Chaco or something.
Platoro, Chaco, you know Chaco where the train is and that. And I got stuck up in the snow up there after being in total heat, but it was
in terrible roads with boulders.
Yeah, it was horrible. Well, I just ran out of food. Yeah. So I had some water and but I just didn't have any food. And I haven't food like 2 days. I recall my buddy and thinking, how long can I really go at this pace without any food? So he's like, you'll be okay. Just keep going.
One to 4 days. And sometimes superhuman strength comes in.
It's wait, how long did you end up going then without eating?
Oh, I went a couple days. Yeah, it was over
3 days.
Yeah.
Oof.
But the funny thing is after 2 days, it kind of levels out and you're like,
I would think that makes sense.
I think you're just you're cannibalizing all your muscles.
Oh, it's totally
just
the
eating
case.
Fat, right? You're just like...
Have you seen the documentary The Sound of Insect?
No.
It's a dark one.
It sounds like
guy goes insects, into the woods to just die of starvation and documents it.
Oh.
They found his journal and made a documentary out of it and recreated it. But it's creepy, but it sticks with me. But it's like all those survival stories. It's like there's another book I read too. It's like all survival stuff. It's like what makes people kind of like sometimes survive and not survive. It's like everyone's always intrigued by that. Is it just luck? Is it more? I don't know.
Do you find yourself almost drawn to the danger of it all too, or is it almost just like is it just the adventure of it?
I think the adventure. I think just the challenge with it too. Yeah, just like, to go out there.
It is the adventure, and it's like, can I do it? And
you think of historically, you think of like Lewis and Clark or something going across America, and they don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, oh, this would be kind of fun. Just
way before Gore-Tex.
Just going, way before. Look what I've got. I've got all kinds of stuff here.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't have food for 2 days, but.
You know, but you had like rubber soles on your shoes or something, right?
Man. Check it out.
Tina bought this book. I can't remember what it is, but she bought this collection of books, some very old rare stuff, and she was reading from it last night, and it was like, what food do we need for six guys in the woods for a week?
Yeah.
And it was this old like list. It was like 5 pounds of bacon. Oh, you know, and it was like all this stuff, flour, baking soda, or you know, like immense amounts, like pounds of things for six people for 7 days. I was like, man, the modern day is like, how about some Luna bars, a water filter, you know, some high protein, lightweight, and maybe some Cheetos and maybe some Skittles.
And we'll go into town in the morning for
coffee. And when we get out, we're going to eat
cheeseburgers.
You gotta have coffee. You know?
Gotta have
coffee. I mean, yeah, that's why we're all here, right?
What do you bring when you're hiking? Do you bring coffee or no?
I usually don't bring coffee.
I bet you don't. You're lightweight, super fanatic, aren't you?
I try to stay pretty lightweight. That makes sense. But you know, you got like a bivy in these tents now. They're like a pound.
You don't even bring a tent, do you? It's like taco.
I bring a cowboy bivy type thing.
Little tuna.
So, right.
A cowboy. So you fold it over.
Just kind of fold it over some cowboy camping.
Make sure the fold is going downhill.
Yeah. Yeah, find kind of a tree and set it up. But I've got some lightweight tents too that I use, which are really comfy. And then some of the quilts. In fact, I let Tina use one of my quilts one time.
He has these down quilts or artificial down.
They're like a pound.
Yeah,
you know?
but they're so super warm.
This
lightweight camping. So he also does. Tell him about the bike races. Like, did you do the Continental Divide or what was?
More
than once.
Yep. Yeah, three times. Never an official.
About that?
Yeah.
Explain
So the Great Divide race is it runs from Banff, Canada. And it goes to Antelope Wells, Mexico. It's 2,700 miles.
Yeah.
And it starts at like 6 o'clock in the morning and it's totally unsupported. You can start from the south or you can start from the north.
It's 2,700 miles.
It's 2,700 miles and it goes on dirt.
And does it go through Glacier, right?
It does.
Yeah, because I was playing in, what's the top of Glacier? On the west side, it's like a little outpost town on 10 miles from Canada.
Yeah,
but that trail goes right by it.
It goes right by it.
I used to always play at Northern Lights Saloon in whatever little town. I can't think. But there's a guy biking from Mexico on his way, and he stopped and he hung out and had a beer and had some food.
Yeah.
And he was on his way on this race.
And
unsupported. So you stop at like restaurants.
Yeah, you can stop at a restaurant. You can stop where any
other
competitors
can stay. You're just biking and racing by yourself.
So
you bring your tent and you sleep.
Yeah.
You could get a room if you
want. You can get a room if you want.
Okay, you can do whatever you want, but you just have to bike all the miles on your bike.
You just have to do it on your own power, and you can't get any help. So you can't, like, call in a friend and say, hey, can you bring me some stuff?
Yeah.
You
know, no support.
It has to be how the other competitors, if they can access that, then...
So it's just anything on the path.
You can't have a friend sneak you a gallon of water.
Nope.
You can't get a nice bottle of brandy.
But there's trail magic. So we call it trail magic. And
trail magic
and
is the thing.
Hey, some guy out in the middle of the desert, this like, is this an oasis? This guy has I remember this cowboy coming up and he's like, I got a beer and I got a lot of water. So you're like,
great.
Okay, I guess I'm gonna live today. Yeah. So
I got some trail magic.
A little trail magic on the deal.
We
sell a
THC drink upstairs called Trail Magic.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a 5 milligram Arnie Palmer thing.
I was thinking, I knew I'd seen that as a brand. I couldn't remember what it was.
I think that's funny they grabbed that Trail Magic.
That's great.
And I suppose if you're somebody who's doing a big... Wait, is it a race? Is that or is
it
just...
It is a race. I mean, you sign up for it.
Did you finish it?
I signed up for the race. Well, that's the story. So I started three times and I never finished.
Because it's 2,700 miles.
Yeah, well, I had just some things that happened.
Sure.
Were they all injuries or just life?
Yeah, kind of injuries. One time I ran into, the first time I went through, I ran into a blizzard. It was in the, and I couldn't get past this pass. So it's kind of like
serious blizzard.
Yeah, it was. And there was no way at the time.
How snow were you biking in before you turned around?
It was like shoulder deep, you know. It was
and
like, there's no
biking?
Way. Yeah. And it was like, I was going to have to
but
wait
then
a
you
week,
had to bike out?
You know? Yeah.
So you biked up to your shoulders and turned around?
Well, I just got up into it and I'm like, I can't get through it. So I kind of went down and I tried it again. But then I was like,
I just
ran out of time. And I'm like, I'm going to have to wait another week to get through this. So so that happened.
We are just different people.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the second time was good. It was great. I actually made it over that pass and I'm cruising along and I ended up breaking my hand.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait,
so in Colorado. So
how was that?
It was just, yeah. So I'm like biking on one arm and I'm thinking, oh, wow, this isn't.
How do you break your hand biking? Did you fall off? Is that?
Well, it's all dirt. So you're coming down these mountains and. I don't know if you know, like, you ever come down a mountain, they've got these water bars.
I'm so scared of
it. Have you ever seen those water bars? And then there's like a 5 foot drop on the back side of it.
Okay.
And it was like nighttime. So I'm coming down.
Yeah, because the water comes rushing down. It's like a gully.
Yeah. So these trails are going down these water bars.
And they get washed out.
Yeah.
It's like skiing at Mount Bohemia.
Yeah.
It's like
so I'm riding my bike down and it's nighttime. I'm trying to make time. And because you're biking from sun up to sundown, you're just biking all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I hit one of these water bottles and I just ate it. Oh. I just took a bad wipe.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I guess in my head, I'm just like biking on a trail. Cause that's all my whole frame of reference is just.
You have photos of this?
I do. Yeah.
You should send us some of the favorite pics from your craziest adventures and you wouldn't mind posting. We'll add them to the podcast post.
What do you think is your favorite place you've gone biking?
Whew, favorite place.
Because I have a vision in my head of like a Forrest Gump kind of running around and like you see these vistas and stuff.
You know, there's so many places and it's just so situational where you get to them and you're like, oh my gosh, like the Platoro Valley. in Colorado. It's the Southern Colorado there, the Platoro Valley.
What town?
It would be well north of Silver City.
Silver City. That's
south of Salida.
Oh, south of Salida on the way to Taos. Yeah.
South of Salida.
I love Salida.
And that Platoro Valley is just beautiful.
Is that on 285 then? Like, where do you get off? How do you get there?
Is it Amargosa? It would be off to the east. So it'd be directly west of there.
Okay.
Amargosa Springs.
The other way.
So, yeah.
All right.
But it's a beautiful valley.
Pagosa Springs. I used to play there.
Pagosa Springs.
That's a nice
there.
Spot. Yeah. Del Norte.
I spent a night in Del Norte. So, yeah. Or I would say Del Norte.
Del Norte. Del Norte.
One of the funny things about this podcast is every guest, they'll talk about a very obscure place somewhere in the middle of the mountain somewhere. And Jason's like, oh, yeah, I played there.
I was there. He was in Del Norte.
Yeah. I played there too, actually. Yeah. And a weird guy made furniture.
Yeah.
And then he had house concerts in his homemade furniture showroom. And he'd like move things around and have house concerts. And it's a beautiful town. I love the haciendas, like those little houses, and you rent a little place, and it's, I don't know. The desert is beautiful. Yeah, I love New Mexico.
And they all got swamp and coolers. Southern, remember the swamp coolers?
I don't like swamp coolers. It's too humid.
You remember that?
Yeah.
All the homes got these.
And there's no water.
Swamp coolers.
And wasting water.
So you walk in the house, and it's like, whoa. Oh, it's
kind of like a like wet water.
Through, it's like hay, and they run it through hay, and it's just that... It's a cheap air conditioner.
They run water and then they blow air through it and it mists you with water, but it also makes it super humid.
It really does.
So not a fan.
No.
I don't
Back
humidity.
To the beautiful places. Overseas. Definitely like Okinawa and Japan. Mm-hmm. Like some of those areas you're
have you skied Mount Fuji?
Stuff, so I haven't.
Oh, no. I thought you were gonna say yes.
No.
Have you?
No, but my friend did.
Yeah, you guys should plan a trip.
I'm a hobo skier. When someone works somewhere, I'm playing there, like, you get free lift tickets. I'm like, can I get rentals? Cool. I bring my boots.
So Woodblind needs to play Japan.
We're big in Japan.
It looks like some great skiing over there.
It does. Actually, yeah. Hansi Johnson, we should get him on the podcast. Oh, do you know Hansi?
I do.
Hansi is also an amazing mountain biker, amazing like trout fisherman, backcountry, everything. I mean, his little kid at 4 years old is doing backflips at Spirit Mountain. It's like, oh my gosh.
Wonderful adventure spirit.
Same kind of vibe.
Yeah, he loves doing that
film, and he's a film guy. I met him with Cooking on the Car because he was helping us with, he went to film school. So he's, you would love
now
him.
I can finally
understand. Hansi Johnson, let's put him on the list. We definitely got to get him in
here. I met him when we just started fat biking. Biking got really big in Duluth. And there was probably like 10, 15 of us. We all knew each other, but Hansi would always come out and we'd ride on the ice and he would get these great photos of us.
Yeah.
Coming down the trails and we'd groom the trails and.
Have you seen his photos of like the first ice before any snow, and they go skating?
He's just got
Seen his photos? Do you know who I'm talking about at all?
Not even a
little. I'll have to tune you into Hansi Johnson. Yeah. He is a talent. He's a
super
sweetheart,
guy.
Too. He doesn't super live guy. Far, too.
I feel like a lot of the people we talk to, and I think even you and I, Jason, we're people who get bored easily.
Right.
And I just think it's interesting how people feel that kind of that boredom. Some people will make music, they'll draw, they'll paint. Some people will go mountain biking for 3,000 miles. And I just think, I don't know. I don't know what else to say beyond that, but I just think it's interesting.
I also wonder that same question.
Yeah.
I was like imagining even what that feeling used to feel like. I don't think I've had it so few times.
What feeling?
Boredom.
Oh,
yeah. I think it's mom used to always say, "It's like only boring people get bored."
Yeah. Well, because otherwise there's too much to do.
I just don't know boring people really. It's like life's too short and fast. It's like if you want to be boring, I guess it's like. If you're not looking around, anywhere you're at, is there any place? Tell me about your worst day when you were so broken down and something amazing that happened the next day.
Well, I remember one time I couldn't even get up. My hands didn't work. And it was like 2 days, not even two, 3 days later, I remember coming off the couch and I could get the food that my roommate left that was on the counter.
Because of a crash or what happened?
Yeah, it was just a bad, I was in a bad wreck and just I was all broken up. Yeah. But I remember that whole thing was like, wow, I'm getting better. And I'm thinking, this is fantastic. Yo,
yeah, like anytime you're so broken down, it's like, yeah, oh,
right,
that's working today.
Look at this, like, is it. This is it.
I'm on my way.
Yeah. But you know, getting back to boredom on that, the first weather job I took. So I went to school out in Prescott, Arizona. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I went to Prescott, Arizona. Okay, and I studied aviation and meteorology. And I was going to get a job flying. But at the time, and this was like 1999, had a really bad wreck. I was all busted up. So I didn't go the flying route. There wasn't a lot of flying jobs. They weren't paying very well.
There's no crop dusting in Prescott.
It was just, it was just kind of bleak with that. And I was just like, do I really want to be a bus driver flying? Yeah, I don't know. So, but I always did this weather thing, and I was studying meteorology as well.
This weather thing.
Yeah. So, and I ended up.
We haven't even talked about what the weather yet. Yeah. That's funny. We better end with that before we forget.
So it was like the summer of 98, and I was a summer hire at the weather service in Marquette. So that was kind of my foot in. So okay. I worked this summer, and weather back then, it's different now, you know, meteorologists, how they work. And we did a lot of data collection.
Did you have green screen though?
No, not at us. We didn't have a green screen. We had a tape room though. We used to have to do recordings for No Weather Radio. So it's like my job.
Do you or have you done like TV weatherman?
No, I've never been. On I didn't TV, think,
so. But he has a secret radio. Hope to yeah. get to do it once in a while just for fun. So, pass that along to all our weather friends out there in TV land. When you want a day off, and if Ron's in town,
you're like a substitute weatherman.
He could be a substitute.
Mom told me, she says, you got a face for radio. Oh. So, yeah, she said.
But he's glowing. You got to see him.
Yeah, so back with that, so I ended up finishing up school, and the first job I had was, it was in Cold Bay, Alaska.
Mm.
Was it really cold?
Well, it wasn't really that cold, but it was out in the middle of nowhere. It's this island out in the middle of the Aleutian Islands. End of the Alaska Peninsula, and there's like nobody there.
Oh, it's mentally cold.
Yes, it's surrounded by volcanoes.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Kind of warm.
Yeah,
it's a roller coaster.
I mean, you get ash once in a while, but it's overcast like every day.
Oh,
and it's like 50 degrees.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's like 40 people. Humid. Oh yeah, it's cloudy, windy, and rainy.
Sea breeze.
That was my forecast. Cloudy, windy,
everything rusts
for the rest of your life. That's what I would tell them.
You know, I gotta tell you, like that. So that sounds much. Perfect.
Have you seen the movie The Lighthouse?
Yeah,
not yet.
You shouldn't watch that documentary. That's creepy. I should watch it. Reminds me of that.
Yeah. So the whole boredom factor that we're talking about is that we would get people and like after like a month they would just lose their mind.
Oh,
like they were just like, what am I doing here? Oh, yeah. I'm out in. There's no theater. There's no place to go for dinner. The only place you could spend money is at the post office. So
you can make your own wine if you remember to bring yeast and fruit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Otherwise, shoot.
Yeah. So you just live subsistence, really. So you're shooting caribou, and you had all the salmon,
this is
and
like
you had
corn.
Yeah. Oh, so you would just
corn lived on the island of Gamble.
Oh, Gamble. Yeah. Right, yeah.
So is that nearby?
No, it's up north. But yeah.
I've been thinking about this entire episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you two should just chat.
Yeah. But the thing is, I loved it. Like I spent 7 years there.
Wow. Yeah. So wait, so you said other people were going and leaving in like months?
Yeah. Well, you had to stay a year or you had to pay yourself to get out of there. But I don't know how many people we had that they didn't make it that full year. And they were like 6 months. They were like, I'm out of here.
And you're
out of
there.
But you're like, I broke my hand. I'm going to keep mountain biking.
No.
You're like, I can do this.
It was just a different lifestyle. And time just really went by because it was just seasonal. And you're like, just, it was great. And the government gave you a home to live in. And yeah, it was just fun work.
Yes. So you ate, what was your average meal?
Caribou or halibut.
And how would you cook it?
Or any type. So
I love halibut, of course.
I had an oven, so I'd always, halibut all kinds different ways. Yeah.
Halibut, yeah, you don't want to overcook.
It. No, super rare.
Yeah.
I learned how to cook even like the small cackling geese, really rare.
Mm.
And I would just marinate them. And I learned how to cook
crispy
all those.
Crispy on the top?
Yeah,
skin on, pluck them.
I wouldn't even pluck them. I would just breast them because you get so many.
You get so many. They're so little, though, I suppose.
Yeah, like you. Now it would be different. I mean, you're an artist, but
not true.
I'm not. I'm not an artist. No, Jason's an artist.
You like cooking a lot. I'm assuming a little more than you do.
He's an amazing cook.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. That's why I come here so often.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's why there's a restaurant here now.
Yeah. I'm a subsistence eater, so it's like throw it on the table and start putting it and eating it. Yeah. I mean, I love good food, but I wish I would spend more time. I'm a lazy cook.
I understand though, that. Yeah.
I can understand not wanting to pluck little birds.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. I mean, you'd be doing that.
Might give me time to think about shooting that little bird. Oh,
I'm so sorry.
I don't even want to eat you now, and that would even be worse.
Yeah.
No, you're just
A caribou is very good.
It's not good when your dad shoots one and lets it sit in the sun and you have to eat it for a year.
That doesn't sound very good. I can imagine if you do it properly.
But man. After eating that for like 7 years and I started
it was very
steak,
lean though.
Super lean.
But you really like it?
I liked it. Mm. It's not gamey.
You don't think it's gamey?
I think after you eat it for a while, after a couple of years, you just get used to it. You're like, oh, this is great. And I would get some. I could order some food from Seattle and they'd bring it on a barge and it would take like 3 weeks to get there. So obviously you couldn't get any bananas or anything because they would be all messed up.
You could make banana bread.
You could make some. That's a good idea. I didn't do that either.
Oh.
So you could get some potatoes and stuff. You could you could get some of those staples that you could add to your diet that you're making in Cold Bay.
Rice.
Rice, whatever you'd be.
I would definitely put a few tins of anchovies because even though there's a lot of fish up there, that's kind of a fun, salty treat.
Oh, for sure.
If you got some pasta and some anchovies,
you got all kinds of flavor.
You don't even need oil. It comes in the can. Yeah. An onion, some anchovies, anything that goes with it.
It's kind of how the Aleuts would cook, though. Everything that they had was... They would say it had flavor. So they
wrap
stuff with that fat and that flavor. And that's what they'd go for. If I shot a fish duck, which we didn't eat them, but the fish ducks had a lot of flavor to them. So
fish ducks?
Yeah, the fish duck, like a merganser. Like if you shot a merganser, you brought them over to the Alps.
They are
and they
fishy.
Just, they would cook those up.
No one eats those. Wow.
They'd go wild over them.
I love that, though.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. So it's like the really big fish eggs, you know. It's like, I can eat some caviar, but that thing's like, it's like eating a marble or something. It's like the gobstopper gone wrong.
It's got flavor.
Yeah, too much. I can't get rid of it.
I think it's
expired.
And then some
So you were in the Philippines. You never ate one of those eggs that were fermented, did you?
Balut. Yeah.
You know balut?
So
explain that one.
So
that's a weird food.
They take an egg and it's just getting ready to hatch, right?
Oh.
So it's all set.
It's like a baby chicken.
Like a fertilized egg.
It's an abortionated chicken egg is what it is.
It's like ready to go.
It's ready to go and then they boil it. And that thing's got the little chicken there.
Yeah. And then they ferment it.
Yeah. And then it sits and then you crack that open, and then there's all that liquid in it. And the soup is really good. It's like a wonderful chicken soup. But they love to eat the balut, you know, the embryo that's formed. So,
Like crack the top off and
we
do
definitely
like a shot.
Ate a few, but, you know.
But you kept
that
it
word,
down?
You know, that you have that in your mouth, that the consistency or the that is. Like,
I don't know what the consistency is. It a little bones?
There's little bones, but you can chew them up. And
but you have to chew them. You can't just shoot it, right? Like, you don't want to shoot a gazoot. What's it called?
Gazoot.
What's it called?
Balut.
Balut?
Balut.
Shoot a balut? Do you want to shoot a balut?
But really there's gross. Nothing that has that flavor that I've ever
I
had.
Can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and everyone who's ever told me the story of this thing, I do love eggs and I have cracked eggs with little baby chickens in them.
I mean, is it?
Yeah. But it's like, I've always been like, oh God, what happened?
Yeah. Is it like chicken or eggs at all? Or is it really just like its own thing?
It's its own thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't resemble the egg and it really doesn't resemble the chicken. So
it is giving me a little upset stomach. It's like I can almost eat anything. This is like one of the things that I'm like, I can't believe it. I've never. That's why I'm curious. I would do it. I would do it though.
That's the thing. Yeah. I feel like I would
I would
try
do anything,
anything
and everything once.
Oh, They just eat everything. It's kind of like the cows or the pig ear that they have and they. You know, they chop that up and call it sisig, and and they serve that. And
but is it crispy and fried or marinated?
It's got garlic.
I bet it's delicious.
That's so good.
Oh, it's a, but I mean, like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, chicken feet and.
You're there and somebody comes off the boat. They're fresh there in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And they're like, what are we eating? You're eating like pigs here. And they're like, oh, no.
I'm not that grossed out by that for some reason.
It's good.
I think I wouldn't.
It's good.
I mean, I feel bad for the pig.
I think I wouldn't necessarily want to know, but I don't know. I don't know if unless I was sitting there how I'd feel totally. That does.
Yeah.
It's a little disturbing sounding.
I do like the idea of you're going to eat the pig, all the pig. I like that part.
The lechon, they love doing that. They take the whole.
I know. Everyone. So. Most of the world.
Yeah.
Well, we do too. We just call them hot dogs.
Yeah.
As my mom always said, they're made of lips and assholes.
Yeah. If you're lucky.
Yeah. No, that's right. Yeah. You don't know what's in there.
I take lips and assholes over other things.
That's great.
I mean, look at, like, pig sphincters have been sold as calamari.
Oh,
I mean,
oh boy.
Right.
Maybe not the sphincter, but something like that. Yeah. No, you look up the lawsuits.
No. I don't want to.
You don't have to.
You don't want to know what's in there.
You don't need a lot of calamari. I don't think you're a calamari eater.
I don't have a ton of it. I mean, I feel like, but I've had enough where I hope it hasn't been whatever. I hope it's been calamari.
It's okay, though.
Yeah.
You didn't die.
You're
and
right.
You're, you know, and you're eating all the pig.
About it.
You are adventurous.
I may have eaten something, probably not, but I live to tell the tale.
Yeah.
So, exactly. That's why people are always telling me how adventurous I am.
It's good to have an open palate.
I'm loving this one, by the way. Good. I'm loving this podcast. Thanks for coming, Ron.
One last question. That's not really like a final question, but I'm just curious, after all your travels and adventures, how did you end up here and how long have you been here and like
stay
here in
2008?
So 2007 I was in Cold Bay, and then I spent some time in Prince William Sound in Valdez, which is like really great
Valdez,
Alaska.
It's crazy.
So I was there, but I had like 2 years of backcountry skiing there, which was just amazing because you'd go up and you'd skin up, you'd put these climbing skins on your skis and climb right up, and then you would ski down in the powder, and the powder was just fantastic. It was deep and just fun to ski on. Yeah. So, and I really wanted to stay there, and this was 2008. My mom came down with cancer, being in the UP, and then this job came available. Mm. And with this job, I didn't have to work shift work, which was really nice, And then mom was like, well, mom had cancer at the time. So I was figuring, well, I'm going to bid on Duluth, Minnesota. See how it goes. And so
I guess 2008. So it's been a minute.
So.
You don't regret it? I'm guessing.
No. I mean, I like it here. Yeah. So and the position was good too. So just with work and good place to work.
And
so.
Have you felt the call to go elsewhere, or is just traveling?
No, I don't think I'll stay till retirement. So.
I
mean, yeah, I'll just stay till retirement here.
Oh, that's,
yeah.
Well, good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
Which is like in 4 years.
It's coming up pretty quick, but yeah.
He's going to retire so friggin' early.
Yeah. I'll see. You never know. I mean, I'm always funny because I'll say, oh, I'm going to do this then. And then, my plans change.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see.
I hate to always make like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that in 4 years. Yeah. Well, who knows where I'm
who knows? Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Yeah. No way.
No, but it's kind of.
Well, because even then, I would wonder, I mean, you'll find you retire from your job, but then what are you doing then?
Right.
Because
we're
bored, right? As we talked
about. He's not going to be bored.
No, I don't think so.
You wouldn't be bored because of.
Every time he just disappears, it's like name the last five little weird trips you just did. I mean, like when his day's off, it's like I'm gonna go bike across this, or I'm gonna I don't know. It's like your adventures.
We just do stuff to fill the days.
Yeah, well,
just try to figure out like, hey, how are we gonna have fun doing this?
And yeah.
I get up on a Saturday or something. It's like I got the day off. Oh, what can I do?
Yeah. You're like, I'm gonna drive to
put the bike in the plane or something and go to Madeline. And I like doing that quite a bit.
I remember one day I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm gonna drive to where did you go? Like Missouri or something? I think I'm gonna go to the Ozarks and go mountain biking. I'm like. Wow, cool.
Oh, yeah, that was a few years ago. Yeah, I was like, down to
Jesus. Okay, cool. It's like, I got a couple days off. I think I'm going to go bike the Ozarks. I'm like, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, that's living.
I don't
life.
Do laundry either.
Wait, on chores.
I'm sorry if you have to work with me. Or be
served by me. It comes at a cost, though. I've stayed single through all this, so it's So there's a little bit more flexibility.
I suppose. Think
that, yeah. So a little bit more flexibility.
Sure, sure. But that, but I think that sounds.
I really hope we don't find a bunch of dead bodies in a basement someday.
What, his dead body?
Yeah. Like, I used to have a wife. I used to have kids, but now I'm flexible.
Did you know that guy? He's up there?
Yeah, I thought he was a meteorologist.
He was moving around a lot.
I would have never guessed. He seemed so kind. He was glowing.
So happy.
Well, after accusing our guest of murder, first for our show.
That's fun.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Oh,
it's been a lovely conversation. I really enjoyed getting to know you and all the adventures you've been on.
Great.
Any other questions from you, Jason? Any other questions, comments, concerns? Anything you want to bring up or mention?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye.
Normally, when we have artists, they have stuff to pitch, but I suppose.
Right. You're just I don't have anything to pitch. So, yeah. National Weather Service, just working there.
So tune in next month for more.
Maybe you'll
adventure.
Never hear from Ron again because he'll
be off flying around.
Bring him some trail magic.
Trail magic.
Yeah.
Need that on the next trip. I gotta look that up.